As parables of Jesus go, the one read today has to be one of the least familiar. Maybe some of you have never even heard it before. It comes from some previous discussions Jesus had with the Pharisees about the love of money and the search for true riches, really true riches. So if any of you are ready to get up and leave now, when the pastor's, pardon me, ready to talk about money, you can leave now. This format used is not an uncommon one. The Egyptians even used it then. Tales of two worlds, earthly life and the life beyond, the haves and the have-nots, the world of the comfortable and the uncomfortable. Hey, sounds a lot like life today. Maybe was written not so long ago after all, and not really written in the 80s of the first century. And wait a minute, that person living in the house above the gate or beyond the gate, how many people live in gated communities today? Not that there's anything wrong with it, but just a modern day comparison. And maybe we are some of those people who live beyond the gate or beyond a locked door that you have to have a special key to enter. It's just not easy to walk up to a front door. Nothing wrong with that, but just a comparison with the scripture lesson today. And maybe for those of us who may frequent downtown, we too may be bothered or tempted to ignore, or maybe do ignore, that person who doesn't quite look like us or look as good or as healthy as we look. I remember one time within the last year preaching at a church on West 95th. And I knew to be very careful about how much I took to that church and where I kept a certain amount of money in my driver's license and a credit card. It was not in my tote bag, and I did not carry a purse that day. And everything looked very secure when I went to the church. And when I came out, and I had parallel parked alongside this church, one of those typical old Cleveland churches that was right on the corner, I looked carefully and was ready to make that turn to pull out of the parallel parking place. And just as I made that last look over my shoulder, there was suddenly a face right there in that glass right at the driver's side saying, "Would you happen to have a little bit of money for lunch, lady?" I've already had bypass surgery. I didn't need more that day. No, I don't have any purse or money with me. It was evident. I just had this little skinny tote bag. Oh, okay. Man, I kept turning that wheel and got out of there. Okay. There are people all around us seeking our resources, and we need to be careful about how and where we use them. The money for neighbors in need goes to very good places. We can be assured of that. And in the days ahead, we have a myriad of choices to make, too. There are Lazarus of the world in our lives. Scholars tell us that it was likely not the Lazarus of Mary and Martha's home, not their brother. The only character in Jesus' parable who has a name, very interesting, so maybe there's something for us to gain there. And Lazarus is likely not someone the Census Bureau would focus on a whole lot. Lazarus was not someone who was clothed in rich purple clothing, which then would have been fine linen. And our names are likely not Dives. Dives didn't really have a name in the lesson today that you read. But scholars have given him a name because that's a Latin adjective that means rich. So what kind of thing was going on here? We too will have choices to make about how we spend our resources of money, investments, our treasures, however you call them, bling, jewelry, boats, whatever you have, that's a treasure, or your treasures of talents. Nothing is said that Dives was a bad person. Not at all. It was just what he ignored, what he didn't see. Just like us. It was his attitude of indifference or ignorance at what was at his doorstep, what was at his gate. no attempt to help others. He was blind. He was ignorant in that regard. He simply does not notice what was there. The only ones who did notice Lazarus was what? Who? The dogs who would lick his wounds, the oozing wounds. And just when two lives are as far apart as they can be, there's a shift, much like the sand, the funnel in an hourglass. The slice of time gets narrower and narrower, and then it changes so much. It's redistributed on the other side, and then what happens? The roles of Dives and Lazarus are changed, and there's a deep chasm between them. And what one had, suddenly one does not have. And what one did not have, one suddenly has. And the parable got me to thinking about how many things there are related to sharing the treasures we have in life, about the neighbors in need offering, and about the impact it can have for families, for education, for treating hunger, for making an impact on those families. And I mentioned about how Christians were the first ones to set up hospitals and orphanages, the first colleges in the United States. Harvard, Yale, and Princeton were all set up by Christians because they wanted to share what they had. We're the first ones often on the site for disaster relief, to share food, to help make sure that water is fresh. God doesn't care how much it is. It's the attitude we have and the way we share what we have. There are a million ways to live and to share the good news, and we sell God short when we forget that. When we try to force ourselves into a narrow mold or fall short because we think that one person doesn't make a difference. Every now and then, we may be called to stand up in a public place and state our faith in what we believe. But most of all, 9 times out of 10, the riches we share will be done in a quiet way. Sitting with a sick friend or a member of the church, sharing conversation, or just maybe a favorite song they want to hear. Telling the truth to someone who asked for it. Ending a quarrel with words that are kind instead of walking away in anger. Writing a simple note that restores hope. Literally listening to a teenager. Looking down or sitting with a small child and listening to them and their ideas. Those are all the ways that the good news, the treasures of our heart and our lives, can go out to other people and maybe even bring some healing to those sores that are in our lives. Robin Myers, a very well-known pastor of a large United UCC congregation, says that some people often come to him and say, well, what do I need to do to become a Christian? And most of those people think he's going to hand them a book or give them a long list of what they need to do to become a Christian. He says, thank the boy who bagged your groceries yesterday when you go back to that store. Do that. I had a similar experience once when I was serving a church and went new there, and I talked with the diaconate about offering a brunch, lunch to people who are neighbors of the church. And our church was located around a beautiful little park in the center of town, and there were many little shopping strips around, laundromats, restaurants, a hardware store, even a shoe repair shop, a Walgreens across the square, all sorts of long-time businesses. So the diaconate said, great. So I said, I want to deliver the invitations because I want to introduce myself to our neighbors. My first stop was to the first business adjacent to the church. There was a nice little green area next to the church. So I went next door. I walked into the laundromat, spoke to the person at the desk, gave them an invitation, spoke with them. And close to the back of that laundromat, there was an African-American man working away, pressing a long-sleeved white shirt. And I walked back to him. I nodded, is it okay to come back? And he nodded, yes. Handed him the invitation, and he read it. And he looked up at me. He had tears in his eyes. He said, you know, we've been here for decades, and no one from the church has ever come over and said hello to us. My tears matched his. And I felt ashamed. I was embarrassed that the people who had been at the church before me had never met them. Then I continued my walk. Thousands of businesses around the square, sharing the treasures from where you are on the other side of the gate. Now, I'm certainly not saying that I've never been guilty, unintentionally or too busy, of ignoring people or looking the other way. I'm certainly not saying that. But I learned a big lesson that day about being careful of who I looked upon and how I looked at other people. Many people of God today may still recline at the Feast of Power on the other side of the gate, belching their way through a feast to which the Lazarus of the world have not been invited. And the church even needs to be very careful about that. True love for God is not complete without true love and compassion for others. In the New Testament, Jesus challenges us to love others as we would love ourselves in numerous ways. This congregation does that. Last week, as the Christian caregiving team was blessed as they began a new lay ministry in this congregation. And you all know there's so many informal networks in this congregation. You know who you are, and I've mentioned some names. I would be missing others. If your heart is where your treasure is, for some of the wealthy who don't want to share, their treasure is away from God. For the poor, many have their treasure in God and are blessed in that way. At a recent speech in Cleveland at the Federal Reserve Bank's recent policy summit, the speaker said that many poor people have spent so much time worrying about money that they don't have the cognitive ability left to make good decisions in other parts of their lives. Sermons, I believe, are best when they're left open-ended, when the ending is what happens when the congregation leaves their pew and goes out to the various parts of their lives, where they work, play, love, and learn. Work, where do you work? Many places, all of us do. In this wonderful garden of creation, we work in many places. In the Old Testament, Jeremiah chapter 12, Jeremiah goes to God with questions and feelings about the unfairness in the world, all the bad things. People go to pastors with questions like that. God, it seems, doesn't have, to Jeremiah, much time for all that touchy-feely stuff. You know what? Quinn Cauldron writes, this is kind of blunt. Nobody wants to hear your whining, Jeremiah. God says, instead of asking all those questions, Jeremiah, why don't you put on your big boy underpants and get ready for life? Get ready for life. As if Jesus himself were sitting somewhere meeting us today, this week, maybe right after church, his dirty feet from the sandals and the dirty roads, his bony, tired knees, his matted beard, and those piercing eyes looking right at us. Where are you going to work for me? And what are you going to do using the treasures you have? Where? Amen.